episode of Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. This is episode 8. My name is Tom Caldwell here in Regina with my neighbor, Brandon Shaymatala. Brandon, say hi.
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
And joining us all the way from the United Kingdom, Chris Haig. Welcome, Chris.
Good evening. And it is actually evening here, so it's very appropriate.
And you, of course, are our foreign correspondent.
I am. Just bringing it up every so often, just like, and our foreign correspondent.
So today we're doing something a little bit different. You know, this is a Hitchcock podcast, and we're going to do a TV series that Hitchcock didn't direct, but of course it is an offshoot, a spin-off, a tribute in sense to Psycho. And the show we're talking about is Bates Motel. We're going to be talking about season one, the television series. And first off, let's go over to the news desk, Brandon.
And now news from the newsroom.
We have no budget whatsoever. Some exciting news out of the Fandom Podcast Network. We're happy to say that our show, Good Evening, is the number one rated podcast on the network for August of 2017. We're very proud of that fact, and thank all of our listeners.
Thank all three of you that listen.
Thank you, Mother. Thank you for sending cookies. And thanks to Kevin and Kyle and Norman at the network for having us on and supporting us as we've been building up to now 8 episodes deep. And it's been a very exciting journey. And of course, thank you, Brandon and Chris, for putting up with me. Now, one more news item. We later on in the show, we'll have more on this, but right now we're going to listen to some Streeters we recorded at a Cineplex in Regina on the occasion of Alfred Hitchcock's birthday back on August 13th.
Hitchcock fans gathered on August 14th to celebrate Alfred's 118th birthday at the Cineplex Normanview in Regina, Saskatchewan. Brandon Shaymatala and I were there to introduce a showing of North by Northwest and talk to fans about their love of Hitchcock.
It's Marshall.
And what is your opinion of Mr. Hitchcock?
He's a terrific director. Yep. Seeing all the filmmakers I love are influenced by him. They use him as a mentor a lot and as a inspiration.
Is this your first time with North by Northwest?
This is the very first time I'm seeing this movie. Yep.
So my name's Tom, so what was your name?
Joanne. Happy birthday, Alfred. I think he's a master, and I haven't seen him interviewed personally except in old recordings, but he seemed like a much more congenial person than his reputation warranted.
And what was your name?
Jerry Hill. I've got lots of Hitchcock DVDs. Pretty much the only DVDs I buy are Hitchcock films, and I watch them over and over again. He's such a master storyteller with the camera that even children can... He can reach a young viewer with the skill of his storytelling. Anybody that's interested in where to put the camera, you know, the craft issues of filmmaking. He's job one of the top people you have to study and learn from. I would think one of the greatest artists of the 20th century.
When you guys watch Netflix or something like Bates Motel, are you listening on headphones?
No.
Depends, maybe.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I
think that's when you really appreciate the music.
Oh, yeah, I mean, because a lot of my work, I can kind of listen to stuff as I work, so sometimes I listen to Netflix with, like, audio description on, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chris is going to give us a summary of the great movie Psycho.
Summary of the full movie, or kind of the importance of Psycho?
Just more of the importance. Okay. Where are we coming from?
Cool. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously we're going to go into the details about Psycho in a later episode and basically maybe even spend several episodes just going how amazing it is. But in terms of the kind of recognisable impact of the film, it's certainly Hitchcock's probably most iconic and infamous film, and it's the one that really kind of has stood the test of time, if nothing else, in the public consciousness, particularly for its impact on pop culture. So the fact that the shower scene was rated one of, I think it was one of the, it was like number one of the 100 scariest thrills by Total Film Magazine. I might be wrong there, but I remember reading that one personally. It is one of the most recognisable films in cinema history. It's been parodied multiple times. There have been some good parodies. There have been some bad parodies. So, like, Mel Brooks's High Anxiety, borrowed from it. Dressed to Kill, borrowed from it. It's even been satirised a little bit in stuff like Scream. And it effectively kicked off. I mean, I can't say that it was, like, the first slasher movie. It's not. That distinction belongs to, I think it's 1960s Peeping Tom. I think that was the first one.
Oh, such a great movie.
I resent that phrase.
I was... Oh, you'll always be our Peeping Tom. That sounded weird. Nope, taking that back.
Edit.
Nope.
But no, so... Which was like, I've never seen Peeping Tom. But anyway, moving on.
What? You've never seen Peeping Tom? Oh my goodness.
I will watch it. Okay, I will watch it.
Shame.
I know.
I'm that nun on Game of Thrones, like, ringing my bell at you. Shame.
Oh, I know. I know who you are. But yeah, it's the one that kind of, I suppose, commercialized it, and it actually flipped kind of conventions on its head in that it, and I'm sorry, this isn't a spoiler. This film is, like, nearly 60 years old. And the fact that it introduced its protagonist and then killed her off within the first third of the movie. It's such a...
Psycho.
Yeah.
Not Peeping Tom.
Oh, yeah. Just for...
The release date was yesterday.
Yeah.
I know. That was the anniversary yesterday.
And spoiling it. But it's hard to go into it without kind of... waxing rhapsodic about it, but it is one of these things where it, the way that it's filmed and the way that it's structured, basically every other horror movie, or quite a lot of, you know, high percentage of horror movies would then go on to kind of develop these techniques. So for example, actually seeing stuff from the killer's point of view, having your kind of murderer be identified, kind of, or identified in quotation marks halfway through the film. Because, again, with slasher movies, we're coming out of the 1950s when there weren't really horror movies. They were like monster movies, but you were perfectly aware of, like, oh, okay, it's the blob, it's a werewolf, it's that sort of thing. Whereas with this, it made the killer very human, and it kind of ushered in kind of the 1960s and kind of the exploration of cinema and the fact that death was very different on camera. You know, the way it was shot and edited, it's kind of famous that when he took it to the, I presume it must be like the Film Board of America, I'm really sorry I don't remember the name of it, they thought, oh, well, you can't show nudity, even though there isn't actually any in Psycho, it's all very well shot. And Hitchcock said, fine, I will do all this, I will edit all that if you agree. And he didn't do anything, and they signed off on it. Also, final little trivia fact that I swear everybody knows, It is the first film to show a toilet flushing.
Oh my lord!
Yeah, it forever and ever it will have that distinction as being the first film that showed a toilet being flushed.
And this is about to be the first podcast where we record a toilet flushing. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
like some kind of shock jock radio thing, just being like, and it's gone down the pan. No, yeah.
Some movies couldn't afford a toilet.
Yeah.
Anyway. Thank you for that highly intellectual academics summary. Brandon, you're going to talk to us about Bates Motel.
Yes, and I have got some wonderful trivia for you guys on this. So in January of 2012, Annie had announced that they were going to be developing a television show called Bates Motel, and it was going to be a prequel to the Alfred Hitchcock film Psycho. Now, the original first script was written by a man named Anthony Cipriano, and in March, Carlton Cuse and Carrie Aaron joined as executive producers and head writers. Carlton Cuse has said that one of the main inspirations for this show was Twin Peaks. And he's been quoted as saying, "We pretty much ripped off Twin Peaks. If you wanted to get that confession, the answer is yes, I loved that show. They only did 30 episodes. Carrie Aaron and I thought we'd do the 70 that are missing." And A&E didn't actually order a pilot. They gave it a straight-to-series order, which is kind of unheard of. Now, it's a contemporary prequel, which means it takes place right now. So that was one of the things that was critiqued originally. I mean, one of the first scenes that we see Norman, he's sitting there listening to his iPod, right? So it doesn't take place in the same time as the movie. But this depicts the lives of Norman and his mother prior to the events in the film. But it's a different town. So it takes place in a place called White Pine Bay, Oregon. And in the film, it takes place in Fairvale, California. Now, on June 15th, 2015, the series was renewed for a fourth and fifth season, making Bates Motel A&E's longest-running original scripted drama in the entire series history.
That is significant.
Yeah, and there were several awards that were given. There was many nominations. And Bates Motel won three People's Choice Awards for Favorite Cable TV Drama and for Favorite Cable TV Actress and Actor with Farminga and Highmore. The show was shot in Vancouver, BC for its entire run, and a replica of the original Bates Motel set from the film Psycho was built on a location in Alder Grove, British Columbia. Portions of the series were filmed there. The original house and motel is located in Universal Studios in Hollywood, and additional filming for the series took place in multiple areas. And that place where they have that that one body burning in that, I think it's at the end of the first episode. That's in, I think it's in North Vancouver, and I've actually been there. So it's Horseshoe Bay is one of the areas there. Now, Vera, we're not going to cover all the major characters because we're going to have a couple of episodes where we're going to be covering Bates Motel. But Vera Ann Farminga was born August 6, 1973, and she began her career on Broadway in a play called Taking Sides in 1996. Her television debut was on a Fox fantasy series called Roar in 97, and her first film was a drama thriller called Return to Paradise in 1998. And Farminga, as previously mentioned, won the 2013 Saturn Award for Best Actress on Television. She's also been in the films The Manchurian Candidate, The Departed, Source Code, and The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2. Now, Alfred Thomas Freddie Highmore was born February 14th, 1992.
Alfred, wow.
Yeah, Alfred, short, Freddie short. He made his acting debut in the comedy Women Talking Dirty in 1999, and he's been in Finding Neverland, Five Children and It, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which is what I know him best from, Arthur and the Invisible, August Rush, The Spiderwick Chronicles, and he's won the Critics' Choice Award for Best Young Performer in two consecutive years, which was 2004 and 5.
He has a series on TV right now, the Young Doctor. I believe it's a new series he's in.
I'm not sure about that. Yeah, he's in this new show where he's basically like some wunderkind doctor. It's a bit Sherlocky.
Johnny Depp was so impressed by working with him in Finding Neverland that he recommended him for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to Tim Burton. And one interesting thing was that Highmore had not seen the 1971 version of the film, and he decided to not see it so that his portrayal of Charlie would not be influenced.
Wow.
So I think that's a great acting choice. Maximilian Drake Max Terrio was born October 14th, 1988, and he made his acting debut in 2004 in a film comedy called Catch That Kid. He's appeared in The Pacifier, Nancy Drew, and Jumper, as well as the supernatural horror My Soul to Take. In the novel and the films, Norman Bates was an only child, so this character did not exist in the books, which is kind of interesting.
Brother Dylan.
Yeah.
This is Dylan. His brother Dylan, yeah. And Carrie Aaron confirmed on Twitter that Dylan's name was an homage to the fictional town of Dylan, Texas, which was the setting for the TV show Friday Night Lights, which she served as a writer and producer on.
Aw, that's cool.
Interesting.
And the last actor that we'll talk about today is Olivia Kate Cook, who was born December 27th, 1993. And from 2013 to 2017, she starred as Emma Ducote on Bates Motel. Cook starred in some thriller films like The Quiet Ones and Ouija, and she is actually set to appear next year in Spielberg's new film, Ready Player One. Emma Ducote also did not exist in the Psycho novels or films. However, the director of the first sequel, released in 1983, created the character of Emma Spool, who was also not present in any of the novels. Now, I haven't seen the Psycho 2 yet, so I'm not sure how that character would compare.
Yeah.
And series writer Bill Ballas actually has cystic fibrosis and was the inspiration for the character being afflicted with that disease.
Now, she's a great character.
I love her. Yes, she's my favorite. I love her.
She's so independent. Mm. Pulls her tick around, and she just takes nothing from nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to find her on Twitter to see if I could tweet her to see if we can get an interview, but I don't think she's on Twitter. I can't find her on Twitter, so.
Yeah.
Everything that I found, there was just hashtags with her name. So.
I don't think she does, like, social media, so it's just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carrie Ann Aaron was born October 8, 1960, and she's an American screenwriter, showrunner, and producer. And in 1990, she was nominated for Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Comedy Series for her work on the ABC comedy drama The Wonder Years. And she also went on, as stated, to work on Friday Night Lights. Now, Arthur Carlton Cuse, was born March 22, 1959, and he is best known for the television show Lost, which he did a lot of work on. Cuse was born in Mexico City to American parents. His father was working in Mexico for Cuse's grandfather, who had a machine tool manufacturing business. Cuse's paternal grandparents were Latvians of Baltic German heritage. And after a few years in Mexico City, his parents moved to Boston, Massachusetts. And a few years later, his father accepted a job in Tustin, California. He went to boarding school in the 10th grade to the Putney School in Vermont, and the school was on a working dairy farm and placed a strong emphasis on education in the arts, music, and outdoors. And it was at this school that Cuse said that he realized he wanted to be a writer. So that's a little bit of the backstory on the people that worked on it. Most of this information has come from Wikipedia, as well as the Hitchcock Wikipedia website, the Bates Motel Wikipedia website.
Thank you for that, Brandon.
Yeah, that was good.
So how did you guys watch the series? Did you watch it when it first came in?
I watched it with my jaw dropped. I actually did watch it when it was airing, the first season. I watched the first three seasons while it was airing, and I ended up getting too busy when the fourth season came around. And so I haven't finished it. But I really am excited to go back and finish it, because I have really enjoyed it. And personally, I do believe that the show gets better. I think season two is better than one, and I think season three is better than two. So I am excited to see how the show ends.
Chris, how about you?
I was aware of it. I didn't see it because I think it ended up in FX over here, because we don't have like an A&E channel or anything. I'm just trying to think now. Yeah, no, so I was aware of it, and then for season 4 and 5, I started because I was intrigued by, basically I'd seen some stuff on social media about, oh, so this character and this character, and I was like, okay, I'll have a look. So then for series 5, I basically caught up with the recaps. So I know how it ends, but it'll be really interesting to kind of see it from the beginning and see if that kind of stuff is seeded in and foreshadowed, or, you know, that sort of thing. Particularly because I watched and loved Lost, and as much as I love that show, it did not foreshadow anything. I love it, but when they were like, oh, we had a plan all along, I'm like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. So I'll be interested to see what Carlton Cuse actually does with Carrie Erin for, you know, the show. It'll be good.
I remember watching this series when it first came out, and that scene when they've discovered the pot plantation out in the forest, and that image just stuck with me.
Mm.
And the whole idea of that subculture, that small industry that is happening in the backwoods of this town, very impressive.
Mm.
And then for our podcast a week or two ago, I watched the entire series in one day.
Wow.
And I didn't
season one though,
sorry, the entire episode, sorry, season one. I watched one episode anyway. I watched all of season one in one day. That's my dedication to our show. At one point even Netflix said, are you still watching? And I'm like, yes. Just keep playing the show.
That's a sign of true commitment when the message comes up going, are you all right? Are you still watching?
There should just be a pulse detector. On Netflix. Like, you just hook it up and it determines if you've died or
not. Like a Netflix wristband, it just goes, yeah, no, you're still kicking, but you're really sure? Because you're on, like, hour six of BoJack Horseman. Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah.
See, it's funny that you mentioned that you liked the pot plot line in it, because to me that's the one thing about the show. Like, there's so many plot threads that are going on in this that are just ludicrous, and to me the fact that there's this, it's supposed to be this tiny small town, and the impression that you get is it's a very small town. However, it's like not. It's like a major city, and these people all have scads of money because they all work in the drug industry. It's like way over the top. Like, if it's this tiny town, why do they have this humongous pier system where there's just boats everywhere? And I don't know, like, it conflicts within itself. And I think that's some of the ridiculousness of the show. But to me, it doesn't detract from it because it's fun to watch. And I accept the fact that there are, in my opinion, ridiculous things going on in this series.
Yeah. I would say the problem you're having with that is that you're using logic. And it doesn't always apply. I mean, talking about the pot scene, because we'll end up talking about it anyway, but I just think it's so gorgeously shot. That entire, I mean, because the first few episodes they do deal with it later on, is kind of, because Emma ends up dragging Norman onto this quest with, like, oh, we're going to find this, you know, this cabin in the woods, all that sort of thing, and they stumble onto the pot farm and Dylan's involved and all that sort of thing. But it is, like, when you're out there looking at the fields and the mountains and everything, I'm there just like, this is gorgeous. Like,
well, that's plot, British Columbia,
well,
yeah.
Plot aside, I'm just like, oh my god, this is so nice. I can see why people would do this.
The nice part about shooting in BC is they didn't have to fake a pot plantation. We'll go use that one over there.
It's like, excuse me, can we just borrow your pot farm? Yeah, sure, it's fine.
Can we shoot here for a
day? They'll be very chilled out. They'll be like, yeah, sure, yeah, go for it.
Well, another big show that was filmed for a significant portion of time in Vancouver was The X-Files. They shot the first 5 seasons of The X-Files in and around Vancouver.
It's a popular destination.
It is. They call it Hollywood North out there. Like, I knew a few people who've been involved in the industry that worked out there. Just some extras, like nobody famous. And
there's a lot of films that are shot based in one location, but filmed in a different location.
Yeah.
Brokeback Mountain was shot in Alberta. So it was set in Wyoming.
Yeah.
So tourism in Wyoming went up because people wanted to see what was really Alberta. Go figure. But no, that's the joy of television and film and the illusion. I wrote down a funny quote. See if you guys can remember when this happened. Norma says, I'm your mother, Norman. It's not like it's weird or anything. I'm not sure what they were up to at
that
point.
Oh, yeah, and he turns away,
and it's just like, oh, I'm your mother. And I'm like, oh, if that doesn't exemplify how creepy their relationship is.
But apparently
in
filming,
yes, it is.
They shot some kind of makeout scenes between the two of them that never got used. They would have been fantasies in Norman's mind.
Oh, no.
So that would have been a little too far.
Just a bit. I can handle incest levels on Game of Thrones. I don't know if I could have seen, like, a mother-son full-on make-out scene. I'd have been like...
You have an incestometer?
It's like a barometer. It goes kind of like second cousin, first cousin, aunt and nephew, apparently. Game of Thrones, we're doing that now. Brother, sister, okay, yep, we're used to it over 5 seasons. Parent, child, nope. Not...
That's back down to Game of Thrones level. Nephews, the extent of your incestometer.
What do we see in the series for Hitchcockisms, tropes, cliches?
I don't know that I noticed any.
Awkward, like, relationship with the mother, but that's at the heart of the relationship, really, because we see it all before, you know, her death. Her death is like several years past in the film version, so we get to see this weird relationship that did exemplify in a lot of Hitchcock films. So, like, well, even if it's stuff like North, you know, North by Northwest, or, you know, where it's all a bit kind of, oh, you know, it's the unusual relationship. I don't know. Like, you know, when you were talking about the subplots and everything, a lot of them, they're not Hitchcockian at all. I think because they have been updated, so it is just like, okay, we've got a bit of filler. Chuck a pop plot in.
Right. Right. But one that I want to talk about, because, again, it just kind of ends, is like this kidnapped Asian hooker plot that's going on, right? Like, and in the one episode, like, so they find this one girl, and that's part of why they find the I'm sorry, we're giving spoilers for the series if you haven't seen it, but they find this book under the carpet, and it's fun. Okay, I'm going to interrupt myself. There is one great scene that does definitely fit with Hitchcock, okay. And that's when they've got the dead guy in the tub, and the chief of police is taking a leak in the toilet right next to him.
Yeah.
That scene is amazing. Call. Okay.
Yeah.
So they find this book, and it's like a journal of one of these Asian hawkers that they've kidnapped, and so that starts the investigation. They find her in the cop's basement. And I'm like, this is just so over the top. And when they find her on the boat and bring her back to the hotel, he, like, off screen kills the hooker girl. And then they just don't even talk about it again. It's just like the plot is done. He kills her and it's done. And I'm just like, what?
Nope. She's not dead.
Oh.
Oh.
Sorry, I totally, because I was going through it and I was a bit like, oh.
Well, are you giving me spoilers for season two? Because I forget.
Not even season two. This is a spoiler for season five.
Oh, no more spoilers.
It's not a major one, I promise. It's not going to affect the plot or anything. But she literally appears, because I went on, because there's a Bates Motel Wikia where it goes through like, so da-da-da-da. Yeah. And it just goes, it's like presumed deceased, and then she randomly pops up in an episode of season five, and I won't tell you how, but it's such a cool.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, don't tell me, because I want that to be a surprise.
It's awesome though, so yeah.
Because I haven't seen that far, but yeah. Well, anyways, they gave the impression that she's dead because they say that he shot her.
Yeah, all intents and purposes. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are cliches. There's a bourbon bottle. Bodies in trunks. Norman kills with a butcher knife. She has a knife and she kills the guy. Mm-hmm. So a few of these things. There's an old black and white TV movies theme happening.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of Hitchcock touches. I appreciated those.
Yeah. Yeah, because he watches like an old black and white movie in the hospital with Bradley, and then there's... Yeah, okay.
One thing I had to say, that Norman is a horrible name for a teenager.
Yeah.
Teenage guy.
Particularly when your mother is Norma.
Yeah.
Norma.
Yeah.
Well, they probably would just, most people nowadays would probably just call him Norm, right?
But even Norm.
It's not great.
That's like that's an antique name.
I just want to pause for a second and say, you realize that one of like the major producers for our network is Norman Lau?
Is he a teenager?
Not anymore, but he was at one time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure.
But I get what Tom's on about. There are certain names which kind of almost fit certain ages. And I saw a post about this on social media, and they were like, do you want to hold baby Grant? No, but I'd like him to look over my investment portfolio. It's that sort of thing. Where you're just like, okay. Like, a Norman, I dare say I've probably known a couple of Normans in my time and all that sort of thing. But Norman, I think maybe 40s onwards. Or at least...
A decade. He's from the 50s. He's from the 60s.
Yeah.
But he's not a modern kid.
Well,
but that's,
it's
you know,
just the way names change, though. There's always new ones coming in a fashion and going out and all that sort of thing. So it's just...
Brandon, do you have the quote from our friend Tom at the Twilight Zone?
So our good friend Tom Elliott over at the Twilight Zone, we said this way back in episode one. If you listen to one podcast... Listen to Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. If you listen to two podcasts, you got to listen to the Twilight Zone podcast with our good friend Tom. And we had posted on Facebook that we would like to have a little bit of feedback on what you thought about Bates Motel season one, if you watched it or anything like that. And Tom was good enough that he responded to us. And so this is what Tom had to say. I was open to a Psycho prequel series because I'm a huge Psycho fan and probably a bit of an apologist for Psycho 3 and 4. I did have a couple of reservations early on, though. The thing about Psycho for me is that it's quite a simple and pure story. Leaving the fourth movie aside for now, the relationship between Norman and his mother is the key. We don't actually know anything about it, but we can guess that Norma was probably very overprotective and intrusive in Norman's life, to the point that he's become very damaged by that. Children are like sponges. They soak everything up, so I've always loved the simplicity of a film that shows the results of what happens if that relationship is warped in some way. But can you fill a TV series with just that? Of course you can't. You need something else to pad things out. And in Bates Motel, we have the backdrop of a town that has a secret. But what's the secret? Its economy is based on growing weed? I think I struggled with that for a while. It seemed to be so at odds with the simple story of this warped relationship that I loved. But you either go with it or just walk away. I stuck with it thanks in no small part to Freddie Highmore and Vera Farmiga, who I think were inspired choices for the leads and elevate the material considerably with their performances. I sadly drifted away from the show after the first season, not through disliking it. I just don't think I had to jump back on board when season 2 started. But now that you guys are covering it, that's a perfect excuse to catch up. Keep up the good work, gents. The podcast is a joy to listen to. Tom. Thanks so much, Tom, for your kind words. We really, really appreciate it. Yeah.
Vera does so well at unraveling.
Yes.
Later into the season, when she gets all frantic, she's running into the police station and everything's falling apart. She does that so well.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her. She's just an amazing actress. Like the way that she uses her face, and you could just see how her mind is, the wheels are turning in her mind and changing. Where, like that scene with the psychiatrist, right?
Yeah.
And she's just like, I don't need a psychiatrist. Who are you? And like, blah, blah, blah. She like gets all mad and like leaves. And the way that she like freaks out and she's talking on the phone, she's like, you tell that sheriff to call me. Yeah. Look what the note said. I'll see you soon. You know, like just the way she acts is just so over the top.
She and Freddie Highmore have like the best chemistry though. Like it's such a messed up relationship. Because you are right. You are basically saying like, because Norma has been like completely warping Norman ever since then. So it is a bit of this nature nurture thing. Was he always going to be a bit twisted, for lack of a better term? Or was it the fact that Norma is so... She's very possessive, but then also can be quite cold. So it's this kind of ultra manipulative behavior. And yet then you also see kind of the lighter side to her. You see, you know, how this happens. They've got the most, you know, messed up codependent relationship. And to be fair, you know, Tom is right in saying that, they are the heart of the show. If you boiled it down, it is basically a show about Norman Bates and his mother. But, and this is the way where I understand why it's like Twin Peaks, because I didn't get the comparison, but I do now, in that at the heart of Twin Peaks, it's a story about Laura Palmer's murder, right? But we have this other stuff, not necessarily to pad it out, but to add, kind of to add flavour to the show and to also give the other characters a chance to do other stuff that isn't necessarily related to it. If it was, because we've got five leads for the first season, we've got Norma, Norman, Dylan, Emma and Bradley. If they were all so involved in it, it wouldn't feel the same because they do have their own lives. So, like, as much as Emma has this kind of big crush on Norman, that does... I mean, to be fair, I think at the end of season one, it kind of... Again, because I've not seen it, but she does get her heart broken at the school dance. And then, obviously, Norman's relationship with Bradley, because he's in love with her, but I don't think he's actually ever capable of, like, a normal romantic relationship with someone who... Well, I was going to say, someone who isn't his mum. Weird.
Right.
Well, it is though. It's like if it was just the two of them, it would be like a completely.
Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, but there's a lot of layers to this. So even stuff that isn't impacted by the Norman kind of heart of the show, it's still important because it lets us see what Dylan's like. It lets us see what Emma's like in this situation when she's away from kind of, you know, the Bates cluster. You know, we get some stuff with Bradley, and her stuff's a bit more tied into into kind of Norman and kind of his fledging kind of sexuality and everything, because she does sleep with him. I think it's in episode 4, I think.
Yeah, it's fairly early.
But then she says, oh no, we can't be together, it's not right, all that sort of thing. And then there's a potentially a bit of summer at the end of season 1 with him and Miss Watson, and there's like a little cliffhanger with her and who she's been having dalliances with, and so it's all a bit it's all a bit confusing, everything.
Yeah, because she has that phone call.
She gets the phone call, and then stuff happens in the finale, because I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's like a few episodes into season 1 and they're like, oh no, just wait, get to the final and finale and everything. Yeah. The one thing that honestly annoys me, and this is just because I'm a dog person, oh my god, why in episode 7 introduce a dog and then just kill it off? I'm sorry, I'm giving this as a warning.
This is character development.
But I just...
Young Norman can have a dead dog and taxidermy it.
Oh.
That's weird behavior.
I know.
But they could have introduced the dog earlier.
Why couldn't they...
The dog should have been introduced earlier. That's the only thing. I understand what you're saying, Chris. It's weird to have it brought in and killed.
Episode 1.
We had one episode before that they found the dog and he tried to feed it, but I think it's the next episode where he starts to play with the dog and stuff. And I think it should have been something that was done from right in the beginning, because we knew we had to get to this taxidermy thing, because in the movie, it's everywhere. And, based on this, it's been so long since I've seen the movie Psycho. I'm getting the impression that he basically taxidermied his mom and in the movie, right? So that's a motivation for what happens in that movie. And I liked the introduction of the taxidermy. I liked that Emma's father is a taxidermist. I really like that connection, that friendship that he builds with Emma's dad.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool, right? But, again, it's weird that it happens so quick.
Yeah. I'd have been happy if it was just like, oh, he finds like an already dead dog. It's more the emotional connection thing, because I'll be honest, the minute I see a dog on screen, I'm instantly like, you are my favourite character, and if anything happens to you, I will be very upset. And so it was the fact that it's just a sweet dog, poor Juno, you know, and obviously like you are right in the wider context, it does lead on to the taxidermy, and the taxidermy has these benefits, and it has kind of ramifications on his relationship with Emma, but there's a website for people like me, and it's, you know, doesthedogdie.com, and just lets us know. Oh, I promise you, it's true. If you look up a film and you're like, oh, there's a dog in it, and it gives you like a heads up, and people are just like, no, no, the dog's fine, and I'm like, oh, good. Oh no, I promise you, it's such a like an anxiety reliever. If you're like me and you're like, oh no, there's a dog in it, I really hope nothing bad happens to the dog. Go on it. It's great.
That's hilarious.
Oh, it's true. You can Google it. I promise you, it is a proper thing.
I think what happened was the dog had some food commercials to shoot and was only available for certain days of production.
I know. They couldn't have thought that dog wanted its own trailer. It had the gold water bowl, and they were like, we're gonna kill this dog. We're gonna get rid of it.
This dog is way too much.
Yeah, diva.
Something else that you mentioned there, though, that is another weird aspect of the show, but it's kind of necessary for what they did, is the relationships that Norman has with all of these women.
Yeah.
Like, everybody is just drop-dead attracted to him as soon as they see him. They're just like, ooh, Norman. You know, like, we got Emma, we got Bradley, we've got the teacher, and it's just like, whoa, like, really? Like, that's a little bit over the top as well for the plot line, in my opinion. Right,
Norman,
especially for this introvert, like he's such an introverted character that he would never feel comfortable dealing with this many beautiful women. He would never be able to function. Yeah. I don't think.
Plus, let's all be clearly honest here. Dylan's more classically handsome. So if there was anyone who would be like, oh yeah, it's like, no, it's probably going to be Dylan more than Norman. Yeah.
Dylan pushes Norman into the relationship.
Yeah.
He encourages him, go over and get with the girl.
Yeah.
You know, he pushes him over that edge. He encourages him like a good brother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do love the dichotomy between Dylan and Norman, though, because they have that full-on fight in, I can't remember if it's episode 2 or 3. They have a proper, and like, Norman's like ready to kill Dylan. And it's so funny because you have Norman, who is like the, you know, he's the good student and he's quiet and he's sensitive. And you've got Dylan, and he's like the bad boy and he's involved in drugs and everything. But knowing what we know about Norman, is kind of hilarious, really, because it's kind of like, you know, the snake in the grass. You don't see him. You don't see kind of the darkness at the heart of him, whereas with Dylan, I dare say there's a bit of darkness there, but it all seems a bit kind of surface level. It all seems a bit kind of... He doesn't seem like actually a dark character when compared to everybody else on the show. So I just thought it was an interesting kind of contrast, I guess, in that you have Norman, who to everybody else is like, oh yeah, no, he's really sweet, and he's, you know, just a really shy kid, he's a really nice person, all that sort of thing. You've got Dylan, he's the troublemaker, he's, you know, the kind of the black sheep of the family and everything. And then as stuff starts to happen, you realize, you think it's such a kind of neat reveal. I mean, particularly for those who, you know, because some of them might have gone in and not actually seen Psycho. They might have done Bates Motel and then just been like, oh, okay, how does this actually play out in, like, the film version of the universe and everything?
Well, I wonder how that plays out, because, see, I work with somebody, and when this show was airing, I was talking with her about it, and I found out at the end of, I think it was season two, or right at the end of season, I think it was at the end of season two, she's like, yeah, I haven't seen the movie Psycho. And I'm like, what?
What?
Yeah, she hadn't seen the movie yet. And she's like, so she's asking these questions. So without spoiling anything for season two, but in season one, it's like, well, how do you read the scenes when Norman is imagining his mother in the room with him? How do you read that she's just actually there? Because visually, they give you the clue. Like Norma is always dressed like very flirtatiously, like, you know, like in like very, you know, fancy clothes and whatnot. But when Norman fantasizes her, she's always, you know, buttoned up and prim and proper and wearing like motherly clothes.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is really fascinating visually to see. And it's like, well, how do you read that? Because as viewers who have seen Psycho, we know what the visual cues are. But I don't know. I couldn't imagine watching this show and not having seen Psycho.
I can imagine that's quite an interesting way to go about it, though, is to, like, just watch the show. Like, because I've got friends who, they've never seen a Hitchcock movie in their lives. They've heard of Psycho, but they don't know what it's about.
You can't hang out with these people.
I can, but I just give them kind of pitying looks every 20 minutes. I have an alarm on my phone that tells me, pitying look.
Oh.
Okay. But no, it would be a good experiment to sort of see what would happen if, you know, if you get someone to watch Bates Motel and they've not seen Psycho, watch it, watch Psycho, and then get them to rewatch Bates Motel and then sort of see how it clues into their perspectives and kind of their view on it. Because there will be people out there who, you know, are like that and they're just like, oh, Bates Motel, is it? Oh, it's based on something, but I've never read it. It's a bit like Game of Thrones and A Song of Ice and Fire. Like, my brother loves Game of Thrones. He's never read the book, so a lot of the subtle stuff that's there for, like, you know, book readers or book fans of the books or anything, it's totally lost on him. But if I was getting to read the books, then would that change if he rewatched it and he's like, oh, so that's what that means. That's what that relationship is actually based on. That's what that indicates, that sort of thing. So I think it ties into kind of how, in terms of like TV and movies and everything, how much you can kind of acquire from the source material and how much it influences what you do. Because I don't think they could have made Bates Motel such a, like completely dense with the Hitchcock stuff if it had been like, oh yeah, you will literally only get this if you've seen the film and have read the Robert Bloch book. It is fairly easy just to read and to understand it and everything. And there will be people who've not, you know, done Psycho or anything. So it is, I don't know. I don't know any of them, but I presume they're them.
Good job. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I think we've pretty much covered everything. I mean, we've touched on the characters. Vera Farmiga is just amazing. Mm. Like, she's just outstanding. I don't really know her other works. Like, I haven't seen any of the stuff she's been in. I really only know Freddie Highmore from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But this is just stellar, inspirational casting with the two of them. Those people really, really hold this show up to a whole new level. We'll talk a bit more about some of the other characters, because, like, in this season, Sheriff Romero is not considered a main character, but he is for season two and going forward. So we see quite a bit more of him. And Bradley is also not considered a main character in this, but I think in, like, it said in season three or something like that, she's considered a main character. And then I just had something. I was investigating and doing research for my things, and I had something spoiled for season five, something else. So I'm a little disappointed about about that, but it's like,
it's not a major
it's
thing.
It's not that big a thing.
It's yeah. like a it's like a 2 second scene.
No, not your thing, something else.
I got so defensive then. I was like,
I found out that Norman's mom dies. I couldn't believe that spoiler. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
No, it's something else. And I don't want to get into it because it's a relationship thing. And I'm like, I'm disappointed that I found it out, but it's like, whatever.
I think, I think I know what you're on about. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Why don't we give the season a rating? I definitely have a cool rating in mind, and over on Trek FM we kind of give funny ratings, so I don't know if you could come up with something off the top of your head, but, you know, out of a 5, what would you give this show? I would give this 3.5 out of 5 taxidermied puppies. Oh,
that is mean.
Oh my god. Which half isn't done?
The front half is not done yet.
So it's just butt legs.
It's just the back end. Oh, yeah.
I'll give it 4 butcher knives.
4 out of 5 butcher knives?
Clean ones.
Chris, what would you give it?
3.5 corpses in bathtubs.
Nice. Which half?
Oh, my God.
Again, you don't want to know which half which half didn't
I'll never
make
bathe
it.
Again.
That's funny. So we're kind of contemplating because we do want to get to the Hitchcock main features. So we would like your impact. We would like your feedback back on this. I kind of want to go through an episode per season, but we're also talking about possibly doing season 2 and 3 together. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can even just do it as a double episode, right? Or something like that. But we would love to hear back from you guys. Please send us some feedback. Let us know what you think we should do. We want to hear back from you. We're doing this podcast for you guys, the listeners. So tell us what you think about Bates Motel and we'll read it on a future episode. Tell us, should we do one episode per season or should we do a double episode to cover season 2 and 3 properly? Tell us what you think. Tell us what you'd like to hear back.
And if you have a long comment, if you want to send an email or you want a 5-minute chunk of us to read your material, send it down.
Yeah. I think it's goodeveningpodcast@hotmail.com. It'll be in the notes, the show notes. We haven't gotten an email yet, but from a fan or a listener, but please send us an email and we'll read it out on the show. We'd love to hear from you.
We'll come back in a moment. But before we go, I want to play some clips we recorded with some directors from Canada and a young guy from New York City with their comments about Hitchcock, recorded at the recent Regina International Film Festival. The Pineville Heist is the first major independent film by Ontario-based writer, director, and educator Lee Chambers. One reviewer said that Chambers masterfully entices suspense.
Oh, Hitchcock was a master. If he's going to be on a big screen, I have a chance to see him on a big screen in that kind of environment, I'm there. Why I think, you know, in film education, you know, there's learning gear and actually using gear and actually learning how to write and make stuff, but there's also looking at the catalog of work that's been done that you can pay homage to, that you can see all these stories that were done decades and decades ago, not just what was made last week. And that's what I think sometimes young people nowadays, they look and go, oh, it's black and white. You know what I mean? And they instantly feel like they're not going to enjoy it because. And I've had instances, not with Hitchcock, but with a Western movie. I remember Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. When I went to show it in a film history class, a student groaned like, I hate Westerns. And at the end of it, he actually said, thank you for letting me see that because I have a whole different perception of he loved the movie at the end of it. And I go, he would never have watched it on his own, but now he's opened his eyes that there's a lot of cool movies out there. Hitchcock, whatever, that's out there that if you're going to be a filmmaker, you should see these movies. You know, Hitchcock had a very unique look and style and feel. And so he's up there as one of the masters of cinematography.
My name is Tim Riedel. I'm from Toronto. I'm here promoting The Charcoal Maker, which I directed and produced and had a hand in writing.
So my name's Damien Kent. I'm based out of Saskatoon. I have a film background, ended up working in news, and I have a real passion for documentaries.
I think we would even use some Hitchcock devices in our nonfiction work. I only know Hitchcock as a fan mainly, but he has these amazing storytelling devices. The way a story reveals itself, that in the post-production of documentaries, it's good to keep in mind to take the viewer through a similar journey, because, you know, though we're trying to educate and advocate for people through the films that we make, we also need to entertain so that people pay attention and, you know, get hooked on the right, you know, story beats throughout.
Storytelling is storytelling, and the Hitchcock's techniques can be applied to documentary storytelling, can be applied to writing even, really, when you break down the plot points. And visual techniques too. I mean, some things, like one of my favorite ones to go to as far as Hitchcock is concerned is Rope. With those really long takes, and we're starting to see a resurgence in that too, in commercial or television production. I don't know if I'd put him in the number one spot, but I would certainly put him as like one of the most influential filmmakers of all time. Absolutely, like up there with like Eisenstein.
So he's on the Mount Rushmore for you, of filmmakers.
Yeah, for sure.
North by Northwest.
Yeah. Hey, that's right. Wow, good reference. Birds scared me so, to this day, I have a little bit of, I wouldn't say phobia, but uncomfortableness around birds.
I'm Eric Pauls. I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I'm a director, writer, and composer. And I've just premiered my first debut feature film in June of this year. Everybody I love is Hitchcock. I think my stance is I have to watch Rope. I got to finish Psycho. I got to finish Vertigo, which I also didn't finish. I got to watch them all.
Rope is amazing.
I'm sure the concept alone is pretty amazing. Yeah, so
Brandon Shea Mattel is the co-host, the creator of our show, one of the three hosts, and he and I both love Rope. So we don't have a very good panel because we all like the same film.
I could argue with you for everything.
It's a great film, for sure. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. This has been great.
Welcome to Regina, and hope you have a great time during the festival.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
My name is Jacob Chow. I am a junior at film school in New York City at the School of Visual Arts. And I have a podcast that's called Word of the Unwise. It's nowhere near as informative probably as the Hitchcock podcast, but it's a lot of fun. It's me and a couple other guys, and we give comedic advice to people who send questions and to questions we find online. Sometimes we answer like Dear Abby questions, just whatever we can get our hands on.
For sure.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
What have you seen of Hitchcock? What films of his have you seen that you remember?
I've seen pretty much all of the biggest ones in film school. Of course, yeah. All the essentials, basically. I haven't tapped as much into the more obscure ones because, you know, he made so many. That being said, I think that I hate to say my favorite of his is Psycho because it's just such an easy choice, but I think it's incredible how much lore Psycho has inspired. It's inspired, like, sequels and a remake and a TV show. It's like people can't get enough of Psycho because it implies so much story with just the 2 hours that you see.
How's Canada treating you?
You know, every time I come to Canada, this is my second time ever being here, I don't expect the stereotype about Canadians being this nice to be this true. And every time I come over and it's shocking. Like, I was in the airport, LaGuardia in New York, and the TSA was, you know, like they always are. The second that I got into Canada and got off the plane, people were, like, offering to help carry my bag. People were so friendly, thanking me for taking their plane. Yeah. Like, I paid money to take your plane. You don't have to thank me.
Well, if you make you, feel better, I'll shove you around or we'll get in an argument or something. Make it more American for you.
That would be great. I feel like I have to leave here with a black eye or I don't know where I am.
Short your wallet or something.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your time. And we're back to wrap up. So where can we get hold of everybody? I'm on the Instagram at @TheTomCaldwell. I thought that up myself. Chris, where can we get hold of you?
You can get hold of me on the Twitter @Hire_Boy. My other kind of major podcasting project, North by Nerdwest. We are on episode 8, came out yesterday, a few weeks ago, depending on when this airs. So you can follow us at North by Nerdwest, or if you want to send us an email, that is at northbynerdwestpod@gmail.com.
And you can find me on Twitter @BrandonMatella. And as far as my other podcasts go, you can find me over on Trek FM, where I do a couple of podcasts. I'm finishing up Melodic Treks, which is all about the music of Star Trek. I am the co-host of our new Star Trek Discovery podcast, which, as of the airing of this one, we just got the first 2 episodes on Sunday, just a couple of days ago. So
congrats.
I'm pretty excited for the new Star Trek show. And you can also listen to my show, which is called Warp 5, which is all about Star Trek Enterprise. And we've had some really great interviews over there, so check it out.
And you're recording your third podcast today.
Today, right now.
You're
I am. So it's been a good morning. Good for you. We got to go get groceries and then off to a church function after this.
Oh,
so
right on. That's nice.
Busy day. But it's stay tuned. So the next episode we're going to be covering for the next couple is a couple of Hitchcock films. So the next episode we'll be covering a little film called The Ring. And it's not the Japanese horror film. So you don't have to worry about that. But this is Hitchcock's silent film, The Ring.
Thank you, everybody. And I wish you good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. We've got sewer issues, so my basement stinks.
Sorry, it was silence that you just came up with. Do you know what stinks? My basement. No, all I had was I had half a brownie at work.
Was it a pot brownie from pot that you found at in the woods?
Oh my god, where's the dog? I'm so excited. I'm not even like being like, oh yeah, I'm like, no, where's the dog?
Okay, hang on. Cash, up here. Jump up. Come here. Jump up here. Say hi.
Hello. Oh, hello.
Hello, puppy.
There he is. Say hi.
Oh. You don't know me, but I would die for you.
I can't hear you.
Oh my god, he's so cute.
He's 94 pounds of love.
Oh. Oh,
I want to cash.
Oh, I want to scritch that chin.
Jump up.
Woof. Woof. Cash.
He was sleeping on the couch.
Oh.
He didn't want to get up.
Oh, he's so cute.
You're welcome to come and walk him anytime.
Oh, my God.
Back down.
See, that's
to
the thing. If I end up, I will just be going, I'm saying, right, I'm borrowing this. I'm borrowing your junk for a couple of hours.
If we could do like a tiny Game of Thrones aside for 30 seconds. I think it's something they're like,
spoilers.
Oh, yeah, massive adorable. Spoilers for Game of Thrones. Where they're like, oh, my God, yeah, Jon and Daenerys, they're so good. And I'm like, they're related. There's no healthy relationship that comes out of like, oh, yes, I'm going to marry my aunt wife. You know.
It would make Christmas simpler.
No, it wouldn't. You have to get two gifts for everybody. This is a gift for my wife, and this is the gift for my aunt, and they're the same person?
Yeah.
No.